Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 560 for comics originally released on May 2nd, 2018. Now, starting us off in DC is DC Nation number 0. Now, this has the added advantage of being a 25-cent comic, so kind of hard to go wrong with that.
Yeah, best value of the week for sure.
Yes, I mean, once I factor in my discount through Cowabunga and stuff, I'm paying not quite as much for the bag and the board, but not that far off.
Pretty darn close.
I think it does almost become a wash at that point. It's funny.
Definitely.
So there were three stories in here, and I had kind of very different opinions of the three.
I did too. It was kind of like a great story or a good story, an okay story, and then one that I really didn't like.
All right. Well, let's start in the order they were in the book.
Okay.
With the Your Big Day, which was the Joker story.
Yeah.
Where did that rate for you? Was that the high point, the low point, the midpoint?
This was one I really liked. This was my favorite of the three stories. And the reason being, I like dark humor. So it comes off, you know, the Joker, of course, being a complete psychopath or sociopath. He uses dark humor, and I kind of enjoy that. I haven't read a lot of Joker in the past. So this was something that really kind of went right up my alley as far as tastes go. And Tom King writing it and the art was great. So I loved it.
And I can see where you're coming from there, because I think they really captured an aspect of the Joker's humor and just his nuts and craziness or whatever in a subdued kind of way. For me, I mean, it was an okay story. It wasn't the best Joker story I've ever read or the worst. It was good. It was probably better than many. But for me, it failed to really get me excited about the upcoming Batman storyline with Batman and Catwoman getting married.
I can see that too. I'm really not looking forward to the wedding. I don't get excited for the wedding issue coming up. So I can see where you're going with that, because weddings are not something I look forward to in the comic book medium.
For me, it's something that is almost, I don't want to say a slap in the face, but it almost is. Because what are the odds 5-10 years from now, Batman and Catwoman are still going to be married?
Probably not. It'll probably be the universe will be relaunched before they remain married.
Or they'll get divorced, or they'll fight each other almost to the death at some point, and then they'll back off from that.
Or you'll have an emotional death scene, you know, add some emotion since they're married.
Something, yeah. I mean, it's something that's a fun storyline, and Batman and Catwoman getting married we've seen before on the Earth 2 stuff in the old days. So I'm not against it conceptually. But for it to be the main universe version, I mean, we've seen Superman get married and then unmarried and then be remarried and then, you know, who knows what they're going to do next. It's a pendulum that swings back and forth, and it's like, you know, hard for me to buy into it.
I understand exactly where you're coming from. So me, I took this as a little story, and I haven't read all the DC titles, but this is my first getting a chance to read the Joker. Since, you know, I've been reading Batman, he hasn't really been in there. So I enjoyed the story just for the dark humor, and I looked at it as a funny little one-off, and I've enjoyed it more than any of the other wedding stuff that's been in the main Batman title. So I'm not looking forward to the wedding, but I thought this was really funny.
Again, it's a good Joker story.
Yeah. So this is, I guess you could say, I know who he is, and I've seen the Joker, but my first real Joker story.
That's fair. It's been a while since they've used him. They haven't used him much in a while in the New 52, or really much at all in, I guess they've used him a bit in Rebirth with Metal and stuff.
I'm excited to see him introduced, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. Now, the second story, Office Space, was the Clark Kent Daily Planet story.
Yes.
For me, this was by far the high point of the issue.
Yes, this was interesting because it's really heavy on the Daily Planet, which has been missing in the Superman in Action comic titles. So it kind of reintroduced the whole Daily Planet thing to with Bendis coming in into the Superman titles.
Absolutely. I think this Robinson Good is the first new kind of named Daily Planet staffer we've met in ages.
Yeah, and I put that down in my notes here, and I'm going to look at my notes because I've been ignoring notes that I've written in the past. Like, okay. I wrote about that on the Slack channel. But Bendis is really great. He almost gives his everything to whichever company he's working for, and I really appreciate that from a writer or an artist, because so many writers, you feel like they hold back and they want to save their good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the type, if you're going to be hired to do the job, do the best job you can. And what I mean by he doesn't hold back, he introduced new characters in Marvel. And here it is, the first two stories, he comes out with Superman, he introduces a new villain in the last title, and he introduces a new character in this title. And I loved it, that he's giving his all.
Well, and clearly this Robinson Good is not just some throwaway character. He's got plans for this character.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely a big plot twist at the end of this little story here. So big plans for her.
This got me excited about the upcoming Man of Steel miniseries and what Bendis has planned. So this, like I said, was great stuff. I think it was the first mention of like red and gold kryptonite in quite some time.
Yeah, I have no clue, no frame of reference, but I was reading that and I was going to ask you about that.
Red kryptonite is a variant. Green kryptonite makes Kryptonians weak.
Yes, I know that one.
In the olden days, i.e. pre-crisis, etc., red kryptonite would have some kind of a bizarre mutation for, you know, a day or two.
Oh, okay.
He'd turn into, like, somebody with an ant head, or he'd turn evil, or whatever.
Cool.
Gold kryptonite, one exposure, wipes out Kryptonian powers permanently.
Wow, so he'll be done.
So that's why it doesn't get used too often.
Wow, so but it's actually referenced in here, so now that means more to me.
So they're putting some of that stuff back in there. It would have been nice if they'd mentioned the blue kryptonite, which is kind of an antidote for the red kryptonite.
Okay.
And there were maybe one or two other colors back in the day. But again, that aspect of Superman, much like the Daily Planet, some other stuff, hasn't really gotten the limelight in the last, I'm going to say the last decade or so.
Yeah, this story was second to the Batman story for me, just because I like the comedy so much. I like that dark humor. But this was nice. I liked that there was a new character introduced. It's just, it was kind of setting of the table for a new story arc, which is fine, but not a ton happened.
Yeah, I guess for me, the difference between the two is the Joker story felt disconnected while time and the space of the Batman stuff. This is so integral to what Bendis is doing. Or at least appears to be, that I thought that was really great.
Exactly. And I'm kind of interested to see what he's going to do with that Action Comics 1000. You have that new, you know, evil character introduced. Then you have this introduced. I wonder how they're going to tie in the Daily Planet. Is that the Action Comics one or is that the Superman one? I don't know. This, it says it's continuing Man of Steel, but I guess this will be Man of Steel story. But I'm interested to see how he ties that in along with that big creature coming.
Yeah, I'm curious. I think we're going to see a lot more of the Daily Planet than we have in years, and I'm all for that.
Yeah. And the last story, that was my least favorite one. I was kind of, ugh.
Yeah, that... I mean, to borrow a refrain overused in that story, I won't hide my emotions. Every time they cut to another team, well, so-and-so hides his emotion, or so-and-so doesn't hide his, or can't hide his emotions, or whatever. It's like, geez.
It was bad. It was bad.
That part of the opening caption for each part was repetitive, redundant, and reiterated.
Yeah, and it was just a big splash page kind of saying, here's this team, here's this team, here's this team. Just trying to show that maybe there's so many things that they need a bigger Justice League. Almost like Hickman, everyone became an Avenger when Hickman was there. It seems like everybody's becoming a Justice Leaguer.
Yeah, but I didn't think it set up the story very well. How and when did they recruit these people and why? I mean, some of them are villains. Beast Boy, Changeling, Garfield, Logan, whatever he's going by these days. Not really Justice League material, in my opinion.
Definitely, I can see that. And no setting up, like you said, no setup at all for why these groups are together and why they split. There's nothing here.
And this whole cosmic forces of the universe or whatever the hell they called it, it felt, frankly, very Marvel.
Yeah, it did. I kind of got that when I was reading this. It got very Marvelish to me. I read that and I was like, okay, I can see that, but really bad Marvel.
Well, and yeah, and... the fact that it has a Marvel flavor to it in and of itself isn't bad. The fact it's a bad rendition of a Marvel flavor is bad.
Exactly.
But it's also, it's a DC comic.
Yeah, so it's completely different, and they put such heavy talent on this story. You have Scott Snyder, James Tynion, Joshua Williamson, who's been doing great stuff as the writers. So the three of these guys working together, who are like some really heavy hitters for DC, I was just like, this is what you came up with? Wow.
Yeah, I was not crazy about the lineup of the teams. They didn't sell me on the arc. And, I mean, the art was okay, but that Superman story had Jose Luis Garcia Lopez as the penciler.
Yeah, it was way better. Way better.
And we had Clay Mann on the Batman story. So both of those were really solid. And this was good, but not as good.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. This, it kind of like, it started for me really funny. And I was like, I like this. I like this lighthearted, it's dark humor, but lighthearted to me story. Then it got into an interesting, I'm setting up a cool storyline with Superman here, with Bendis coming in. And then it went to just like out with a fizzle, the whole book. I was like, wow, that's a horrible note to end on.
I almost would have put the Justice League story maybe at the beginning, then gone to the Batman story, and then the Superman story.
That would have made more sense. That would have made a lot more sense. They did that with Action 1000, putting Bendis at the end with this big thing that here's the story that's coming to get everyone super hyped for this big writer leaving Marvel, coming into DC, and here's his plan for the story going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there was no setup for any story with this Justice League thing, so I'm hoping that something good will come out of it with this Justice League No Justice thing, but this story just did not do it for me.
Well, this one has me cautiously optimistic at best for the Justice League No Justice miniseries.
Okay, cautiously optimistic. I bought it, so I'm getting it regardless.
Well, but that's the optimistic part.
Yeah. That makes complete sense.
I pre-ordered the whole thing. I was going to get it regardless, but I don't have high hopes.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I was like, well, I bought it, so I'm looking forward to it. But I'm just looking. I'm like, man, if I had this heavy talent on there, I would expect something better if I was DC.
Yeah, and I think part of it falls to the editor, particularly that refrain that was just overused four times in, I mean, how many pages was that story? I mean,
it wasn't very long. It's like 6 or 7 pages. I don't know.
Short enough that you shouldn't use the same refrain in, you know, four times.
Over and over and over, yeah.
So I mean, maybe I'm nitpicking on that, but it didn't work for me.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat because I agree with you 100% on that.
I mean, this is one where I enjoyed the Joker story. It didn't sell me on the arc, but for a done-in-one kind of a one-shot set in that time frame, it was really good. To me, the Daily Planet Clark Kent one was just, I mean, that if all my comics were that way, I would not be behind on my reading.
Yeah. This what I think is going to happen with this, you know, I hate prognosticating, but I do it all the time. With the teams being split up, I almost think each one of these writers is taking a team.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be an alternating story. So it won't be that contiguous thing like we had with the Avengers Weekly that came out, where you had those good writers come together and they kind of bounced ideas off each other. And I don't think any one person was in charge of the story. They collaboratively, you know, as a team, they wrote it. I think here what you're going to be is Scott Snyder's going to have, let's say, Team Wonder, and this guy's going to have Team This, and so-and-so is going to have Team That. And it might be disjointed. That's what I'm worried about.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I think each of the teams is going to have its own arc, and they'll maybe join back at the end or something. I haven't paid too much attention of the structure of how they've got it packaged up or whatever.
Yeah, just the way they did it here, that's the way it kind of felt to me, like what they may be doing.
Yeah, it seems like a fairly random assortment of characters in some of these cases, and the whole story seems to be out of the blue, having recently caught up on Justice League and Justice League of America. This may be great. I'm not expecting that at the moment.
Yeah. All that being said, for 25 cents, if any of you guys have not bought this, you're crazy, because this is the best value book of the year, because it is wall-to-wall, cover-to-cover stories. There's no advertisements in here.
Absolutely. And for me, the Clark Kent one in and of itself was definitely worth the money. I think even if it had just been that Batman one with the Joker and stuff, I would have been happy at 25 cents for that. I mean,
oh, yeah, that's definitely worth 25 cents for sure.
You know, I think the Justice League was the misfire.
Definitely. I'm with you 100%.
This is one where if it had been a $2.99 or a $3.99 book, I think I would have graded it a bit, maybe a little lower or whatever. But for me, this was a very solid kind of B-plus or whatever. I think, again, with the price point, it's really hard to go wrong with it. And certainly when they offered it right before New Comic Book Day, if people was like, geez, comics are so expensive, the store could have said, well, we've got this DC Nation here for a quarter. You know, yeah. So the timing was good on that.
Buy one for each of your kids. There you go.
Yeah, they don't have to fight over it.
Yeah.
So how about you? What would you give it for a rating?
I would probably, looking at it, I think, like I said, best value of the year, I think I would go with a B minus, except for the price. With this price being so low, I went with a B plus because I had to give it some extra oomph just because of the total package, getting wall-to-wall stories. You get your money's worth with this, so B plus.
Yeah, I think we're pretty much at the same spot on that.
And I literally wrote down here, B minus, due to price, B plus.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't go wrong with a 25-cent comic. This had enough story to really hook me in that Superman one and to entertain me in the Joker one. It was a prelude, an intro, and even a bad one at that for the Justice League. So there, I mean, that if that Justice League one had been solid.
Oh, this would have been an A-plus book.
Yeah.
This would have been you have to buy a book if it was solid.
But they didn't, so oh well.
Yeah, exactly.
Hate it when that happens. So close.
Yes.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yeah, definitely.
This is Hunt for Wolverine, Weapon Lost, number one. This is one of four miniseries that spun out of the one-shot Hunt for Wolverine, in which they are hunting for Wolverine.
Or in the comic community, we call it a money grab.
That would be a fair assessment, too.
Yes.
I had read The Hunt for Wolverine right before this, and that kind of helped set the scene.
It does.
Daredevil was recruited by Kitty Pryde in that issue to go find Wolverine. It's like, he's missing. Where is he? You know, maybe he's alive. Maybe he's dead. We don't know. Go figure it out.
Exactly.
Daredevil recruits Misty Knight. What was the name of the Inhuman? I always forget his name. Frank McGee.
Frank McGee, yep.
And I guess it was Misty's idea, was it, to go hunt to go grab Cypher?
Yeah, Misty's idea to get Cypher. So Cypher is – so you have Cypher, Misty Knight – Frank McGee and Daredevil are the team.
Yeah, kind of an interesting mix. I haven't seen Cypher for a while. He was one of the New Mutants, not one of the like original, was it five or whatever, but he was a member fairly early on, within the first year or two of the title, I believe.
Exactly, but he hasn't been used for much recently.
And he has not aged well in this comic.
No, he has not.
Little bit nuts, just generally not looking that good.
Basically, almost a vegetable.
In fairness, I believe he has died a time or two, and that kind of, you know, makes your health suffer a little bit. But, I mean, he got better.
I can see that.
What I enjoyed about this is they get the team together, and they actually start the search.
Yes, they did. Which, yeah, with a lot of stories, I was afraid it was just going to be build the team, getting the band together. But at least they started something in here.
Yeah.
Which gives you a little morsel to read the next issue.
Exactly. It gives you, like you said, a little something to get you to that next issue.
Exactly.
It's not often we see this sort of like a detective team up in the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, definitely. It's sometimes missing, so this is nice. It's going to be a street-level search, almost, you know, an investigation.
I'm curious, you know, how this plays out, where they go. I think bringing the Frank McGee character in, because he was in, I don't even remember which of the Inhumans titles.
I remember, I've read all the Inhuman titles, but they're so, most of them were not that memorable that I kind of remember him, but I don't remember him very well.
I remember his powers and such, and I just don't remember which, if it was Uncanny Inhumans or Mighty Inhumans or, you know, all new, all the same Inhumans or whichever, you know, adjectives they put in front of it.
Exactly.
Because they had like three or four at one point, and it's like, it's hard to keep track.
They went really heavy on the Inhumans there for a while, and it was too much.
Yeah, they need to scale back on that, but bringing this character back so he's not totally forgotten, I thought was nice.
Yeah, it was a nice touch, and it looks like it's a complementary team, and that if I was getting together an investigative team, you got one guy who has a legal background, you know, who can fight like heck and has some superpowers. You have Misty Knight, who used to be a cop. you got this McGee guy, you know, with his powers that should help with investigation. And then you have Cypher, who basically, you know, he can translate all kinds of languages, but he can do anything on the internet, into the web. He can find data almost instantaneously. So it's a perfect team to put together if you're going on a search.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was interesting. And McGee used to be a cop too.
Oh yeah. Okay. I didn't. Yeah, all right. Now, one thing that I wrote on here, one of my notes, which I am going to refer to my notes. I put on here that, this, okay, not the story. I'm not giving this story an A+. This is not an A+ book, but for accessibility, this is an A+ comic for accessibility. And what I mean by that, I almost wonder if Marvel thought, hey, there may be some DC people or some non-readers who come in and they look at this, the Hunt for Wolverine, and someone tells them, hey, they've been dead, and they buy the main title, and maybe they pick up some of these because it's written in a way that, you know, Charles Soule doesn't normally write this way, but he in detail explains, here's what this person is, here's their background, mm-hmm. here's their power, and it helps you to understand who they are, even if you don't know anything about these people, which was a very nice touch for a new reader.
I think they ought to do that more, personally.
Me too. It really gave you that hint of what you and I grew up with when we were younger, that they did that with almost every comic. They told you who they were and what their powers were, and you never get that anymore, it seems like.
Well, no, because back then, every comic, and it was like, you know, 35 cents, 50 cents, whatever, was a standalone, not full story, but a standalone purchase. And they realized if they didn't introduce the characters, didn't tell you what was going on, you weren't coming back.
Exactly. If I would have read this comic with, you know, Mr. McGee and Misty Knight, and I didn't know who they were, and McGee, I didn't remember who he was, I would have read this, I'd just been like, who are these people? I don't really know what she does. She crushes an eight ball with her hand. Maybe she's really strong. I wouldn't know what they did and what's going on here. So that really helped with the story.
Yeah. There have been a number of comics I've read where I get to that last page, they do a big reveal of some character, and I'm like, you know, I've been reading this title, whatever title it would be, for, you know, a decade or two or three or for however long, in some cases, it's been coming out, you know, for anything that started, say, after the 80s. And I have no clue. I have no recollection. I don't recognize the character. Therefore, the entire reveal they do falls flat.
Yeah, yeah. Like, who's this chump?
You know, it'd be, you know, you're watching a TV show. The guy walks through the door, and instead of the dun-dun-dun, you get the wah-wah kind of.
That would be perfect. All right.
That'd just doesn't awesome. Work.
It doesn't. So I wish more people did this, and it was so nice. It was refreshing. I wrote that in like all capitals, A+ for accessibility. Thank you, Charles Soule, for doing that with this book.
Yeah, I think he did a terrific job on that. I thought this was a good read, but I don't think it was like an epic event sort of read.
No. This is probably like 80% getting the band together issue. So if you go into it realizing that, if you're listening to this podcast, there's not big action, you know, things happening where you're gonna be like, wow, this is a page turner, but you're gonna get the foundation built for understanding who these characters are for the story to come.
Yeah. I think they're kind of trying to build Hunt for Wolverine as like a big event in Marvel. And it's a big deal, don't get me wrong, but it's not an event in the same way as Civil War or Secret War or, you know, any of those sorts of events.
Yeah, definitely not. This is a much smaller scale. It's one character, but they're trying to make it a big thing. And, you know, I've been seeing them hidden in the back of these comics for the past, 6 months, it seems like. He keeps having these pop-up appearances that it's kind of taking away from the reappearance of him in the future. So I'm just kind of like, okay, he's coming. Now, you read the main Hunt for Wolverine title, correct?
Yes, and to prep for this, I chased down a checklist of the Hunt for Wolverine that gave me which titles and which issues those little one-page after-the-credit scenes were, and I caught up on those titles.
Oh, so you read all those. Nice. What'd you think?
And I thought, in many of the cases, it was a complete waste of a page.
Yes, it was. It really was.
I think it was in the Black Panther one. We had a page where it was a bunch of widescreen panels. And the first one had, Manifold picking up Storm so they could go help Black Panther and stuff. And they're doing it in front of a restaurant. You've got the same street, but no people. Next panel, you've got Wolverine on the far left. Next panel, he's in the middle. He's sniffing. Next panel's on the right. Familiar scent. That's it.
Exactly. Almost every one of those things was just this little thing where he just happened to be strolling through, where he pops up for no apparent reason, and it doesn't have any impact on the story. And I'm just like, it seemed like a complete waste of time.
It was better than a Red Sky crossover for Crisis on Infinite Earths, but it was no more satisfying.
Yeah, it was just like, they could have left that page off almost, and I wouldn't have noticed.
I was expecting these pages to somehow build up to something.
That's what I thought. It wouldn't just be a, like, you know, here's this little character in the background. It would be something that would happen, but it's not that.
No, not at all.
Now, how about the main Hunt for Wolverine? Did you like that one?
I liked it, but it was also something where it was very clear that it was setting up this miniseries and the three other ones.
Correct, yeah.
So, I mean, there are certain titles, and to a degree, DC Nation falls into this as well, where the whole point of the issue is to serve as a springboard for other stuff.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And that's what that was, for sure.
Well, and I think the Avengers issue we talked about last week, where it's kind of setting up the next set of titles, is kind of the same. And you can do that in a way that's satisfying, and I think the Avengers issue certainly did. And you can do that in other ways that's not so satisfying.
Yeah. The main thing I got out of that Hunt for Wolverine main title was I appreciated that they addressed how he got out of the molten adamantium.
I appreciated that they addressed it, but it felt like a little bit of a cheat.
I agree.
I mean, the way they did it was plausible. The fact they did it felt like a cheat.
Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
So, and it too little too late. If they'd done that, I don't know, as an epilogue to the death of Wolverine or whatever way back when, okay, I'm good with that.
Yeah. So now, you know, reading all that stuff and coming into this, what did you think overall for this title?
I liked it. I thought it was good. I didn't think it was great. Like I said, it was a good read. The fact there are three other kind of, I don't want to say competing miniseries doesn't help this.
Yeah.
For me, I went with a B- on this. I mean, I liked it well enough, but I don't know that I could really go to somebody and give them a strong sell and say, you got to read this.
Yeah, I understand exactly where you're coming from. Like, the art was fine. The comic itself was fine. It was a kind of ho-hum issue as far as what's going on. If I was directing someone to this, they would understand the characters and what the heck is going on. Accessibility through the roof.
Yeah.
But the story itself was just kind of lackluster. It's just kind of there, building towards the next issue. So I gave it a C+.
I think part of it is, aside from Daredevil, most of these characters feel, I don't say like cast-offs or whatever from other titles.
They kind of are, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything that's failed, they take a few characters out and they stuck them in here.
And, yeah, there are reasons to read this book. Certainly if you're a Misty Knight fan or a Frank McGee fan or a Cypher fan or a really big Wolverine fan, worth reading. But it's not something where I think everybody who's reading any Marvel comic really ought to check this out or something.
No, this would be something if it didn't come and I was just reading the main Hunt for Wolverine title, I think I'd be okay as a Wolverine fan. That's how I felt about it. I don't feel like it's something that's a must read.
Therein lies the rub. There is no main Hunt for Wolverine miniseries.
That's true.
It was a one-shot.
Oh, so that was it. I thought there was a main, and then these were the... Oh, all right, never mind.
It kicked off into these four, and then I don't remember if they lead into something or not.
See, I've been buying the bundle. I don't even know what I have coming.
I know that feeling.
That is the rub. All right, well, knowing that, okay, if you're a Wolverine fan, you have to read this.
We'll see how the other miniseries do. It's good to have Wolverine back, or at least it will be when we do.
Definitely. I've been looking forward to having them because I got really kind of back into comics in 2012, and shortly after that, Wolverine died. I was like, okay, that's depressing.
I did like how in this issue, when Frank's getting recruited, he's like, well, which Wolverine? Is it this one? Is it that one? Is it this other one? Is it this other one?
That was funny.
And I think Wolverine? There might have been one or two more they could have referenced.
They could have. They could have brought in Laura. They could have brought in Gabby, any of the Wolverine.
Laura they did. Gabby they didn't.
Oh, Gabby they didn't. And there were more.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was hilarious.
So, yeah. Shall we move on to our other book?
Definitely.
This is Xerxes, The Fall of the House of Darius. Matter of fact, it may have a little bit more on the title. I think it's, Xerxes, The Fall of the House of Darius and the Rise of Alexander. This is the second issue. We didn't do the first, although I did read the first right before reading this one.
Cool.
I'm going to say a couple of things up front just to let people know where I stand on certain things.
Okay.
I'm not a huge fan of Frank Miller's art style.
Okay. I was going to ask you about that.
I think he's a great storyteller. He's not my favorite artist. And I certainly think he's got an impressive body of work, and I acknowledge his work and his place as a truly legendary comic book creator.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's done great things, but I'm kind of in the same boat as far as art goes, art alone.
And, I mean, some of his storytelling techniques or whatever, like in Dark Knight and a few other things, just don't work for me. With this, I mean, this is weird because I like 300. Both as a comic and as a movie, although it helps to crank up the frame rate on certain scenes so it doesn't take, you know, forever for them to, I don't know, blink.
Exactly.
But this didn't work as well for me as 300 did. And, I mean, part of it is neither story is really in my wheelhouse. I'm not really into war stories that much.
Really? Okay. That makes a big difference.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure, I'm virtually positive I've watched 300 The Rise of an Empire. When it came out, what, 4 years ago now?
Yeah, it was a while back. There was 300, and then there was the follow-up movie.
And that was The Rise of the Empire I was talking about.
The Rise of the Empire. Okay, both. I'm sorry. There's 300 and The Rise of the Empire. I'm sorry. Yeah, okay, you're talking about the second movie.
Yeah, well, I think technically the title was 300 : A Rise of an Empire, just so it was clear it was a sequel to 300.
In this comic, yeah, it seems like it takes place between the two movies.
Okay, I was going to say, some of it seemed a little similar-ish to the movie, but not exact, but I don't have a clear enough recollection of the movie. Well,
yeah, in the movie, Xerxes kind of comes back,
mm-hmm.
and he was like the, I guess you could say, like almost seen as like a god to the people, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
He can't be defeated in battle, and he's all-powerful, all-knowing, a ruler. And in here, Xerxes is in this comic, and his dad dies. So this is kind of setting up why his dad saying to him in these dying words, you know, no man can defeat these people, you know?
I couldn't remember if that had happened in the movie or whatever because it had been so long.
Okay, yeah. So this seemed like, when I read this, I was like, this is taking place between the first one and the second one.
Okay, again, it may be the fact that this is 4 years later doesn't help. And the other key difference between this miniseries and 300 served as the blueprint for that movie.
Oh, yeah. And 300 was amazing. The movie was amazing. The comic was great. And this one, I felt like, is not at that level, the comic itself.
Well, I mean, to a degree, the comic is either based on or adaptation of, depending how close the story matches, of the movie.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
And
exactly.
I don't know. It just didn't work for me as well. The other thing that was different, if I recall correctly, is 300 was told portrait, not landscape.
Yes,
landscape,
it was.
Not portrait, whichever.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
It was told 90 degrees off.
Yeah.
And not a big deal either way.
Yeah, regular, you know, portrait comic.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, not a big deal either way, but a difference.
Exactly. Exactly. And now, with Frank Miller's art, do you know what it is that bothers you about his art?
There were a couple of things in this kind of a story. One, it's a little more gruesome.
Yes.
Two, there's some heavy uses of blacks and stuff in places.
That's what bothered me.
I mean, there's one place, if we go to the center staple, where in the lower left panel, you've got the helmet, you've got like their boots or whatever, but the body is all black.
Yeah, that's the thing that bothered me, because I was going through it and I was like, the art's not doing it for me. And what it is he does not do shadowing. He uses a very heavy ink where if something is shadowed, it's black, just black. And
yeah.
It makes it almost seem like a little bit flat.
It definitely seems flat. And there's his style. I mean, I gravitate towards a more realistic style.
Me too. I'm not an art snob. And I like that photorealistic stuff that I just can't imagine being a photorealistic artist. It's just amazing. Whereas sometimes with these, you know, sketchy artists or a Frank Miller, I look at him like, I think I can maybe do that if I set my mind to it and I set aside a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
I could do this.
And I'm by no means suggesting that, I mean, I think I could do it. I'm not suggesting I actually could do it. I want to be clear on that.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I look at Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, a John Byrne, a George Perez, an Ivan Rice, trying to think of some others, an Aaron Lopresti, some people that just have a wonderfully clean, crisp, realistic-looking style.
I mean, I wouldn't even attempt.
I mean, that works for me on a level.
It works for me, and I look at it as something that's almost like, it's not something I could sketch out if I set aside a couple days, you know? Mm-hmm. It's something that I can look at and admire. And so I'm with you in that. I like the photorealistic stuff, so.
I mean, but Miller's got a really wide body of work. By no means read it all, but, you know, some of it, like some of his early Daredevil stuff I really enjoyed. Yeah. Other stuff, not so much. I think there's definitely a large audience for this. I know somebody who is a really strong 300 fan. Don't know if he's read this or not. At some point I will ask him because I'm curious what that person thinks of it.
Oh, cool.
But this is one that I was hoping it would connect with me more than it did, but I frankly wasn't terribly surprised that it frankly kind of fell flat for me.
No, I can understand, especially if this isn't in your wheelhouse and with the art style, I can see that. Now, this, that being said, this is something that's kind of in my wheelhouse. Yeah, I talk on the Slack channel about how I love Conan stuff. I like violent stuff. I like 300. I like the swords and sandals. I like historical stuff. I like the Age of Bronze that came out from Image. So this is something that I really do like. So it probably struck me differently than you.
Yeah, I would say most of what you were sitting there describing between the swords and sandals, Conan, yada yada, not really stuff I gravitate towards. I'm not alienated by it or anything, but the story is less accessible and resonates less with me because I don't relate to that stuff. I'm not intrigued by it. I'm not fascinated by it.
No, I can understand that. Like I said, you're kind of into like the whatever your likes are, and me, I'm really a historical buff, and mm-hmm. I love the ancient history, you know, the Roman Empire, you know, the Greeks. I love this stuff, and I gravitate towards that. Even when I'm playing my video games, I love playing the Total War series, you know, Rome Total War. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
So when I saw this coming, I was like, oh, I love that stuff. So I wanted to definitely review this.
Well, and I wanted to review it too. I was curious how this would work because I think 300 is definitely, you know, a bit of a hallmark comic series in many respects.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
This is not.
Not nearly as strong as the original story.
For me, I'm going to go with a flat C. I can definitely see how some people would be nuts over this and love it. Others, I could see it wouldn't work for them either. For me, it didn't work, but I wasn't like repelled by it, and I certainly didn't think it was like amateur hour or poorly done or anything. It was well done for what it was setting out to do. It just, like I said, failed to connect with me.
I understand completely where you're coming from. Me, this is right up my alley. Love this type of stuff. Other than the art really is not my style, the art here. But I love the blood and guts. I love the ancient history. I like the source material. I love the original 300. So this is right up my alley. I love it. But this story is not as good as 300. And that being said, I went with a B+ on it.
Okay, I can see that. It just comes down to, again, it much more in your wheelhouse and area of interest than mine, and that's cool.
Exactly. It really comes down to what your likes are, because like, some of the stuff, like I'm really getting excited for the 2019 Marvel takes over the license of Conan, and there's some of us that have been talking on the Slack channel, and we're like, ah, you know, they're going to come out with the omnibus maybe for, you know, the whole Conan series, or maybe the Savage Sword of, but, you know, that's... going back to when I was a kid, I used to love that stuff. But it just depends on your likes. I like the war comics. I like the Conan comics. And I loved Marvel comics. DC, I read a few things. When I said I never read DC, I read some. It just wasn't very extensive.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah. So what's been going on with you in reading world? Anything that catches your eye? What's going on?
This is the first week, I think, all year that I haven't had a net loss in terms of my stack growing.
Awesome. So you're making progress.
I broke even.
Oh, you broke even. Hey, we'll take it.
I caught up on Amazing Spider-Man, which I really enjoyed. Oh, cool. Black Panther, which I thought was all right. Captain America, She-Hulk, X-Men Red, although it may not be totally current on that. I at least caught up far enough to get the Where's Wolverine stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Marvel 2-in-1, Incredible Hulk, and the issue or two that I was behind on for, like, Detective Comics, Invincible Iron Man, Justice League, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, which is continuing. This was the annual I read that is continuing the Shattered Grid stuff. Really loving that. Cool. Mighty Thor, Terrifics, Go-Go Power Rangers, and yeah. So not a ton of stuff, but enough for me to at least, you know, equate to the shipment I got this week.
Cool. What are you current on Amazing Spider-Man?
I believe so. $7.99 was the last one I read, and I'm pretty sure 800 hasn't come out.
I haven't received it yet, so to my knowledge, it has not come out.
I'm pretty sure if we'd seen that for the upcoming episodes, we'd have picked it.
Yeah, so have you been enjoying it, the storyline?
I've been liking it. I think they're doing some good stuff. I think Slott's ending on a really high note, both creatively and certainly sales-wise.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I was seeing that. The sales numbers came out, and it was selling like 200 plus thousand copies. I was like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, just some staggering numbers, and it puts the title in a very unique position of being kind of elevated well above where it normally would be right before something like 800, which, you know, is going to be a bigger size issue, a big deal, yada yada. So I'm curious how that plays out.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really good. I'm looking forward to 800, and I'm interested to see a new writer. I'm one of the ones where Dan Slott did his time. He put in some work. I'm a little bit sad to see him go, but a lot of people are happy to see him leave. But, you know, there's so many writers that don't stay with the book very long, and this was a meaty run that this guy had.
This was like, what, 10 years?
Yeah, it's insane how much he wrote. I mean, you can't even fit it in two or three omnibus, I don't think.
Well, and everything from the Superior Spider-Man stuff that turned a lot of heads. Some people loved it, some people hated it, and I get it, and I respect that. But he had a lengthy run and some I think, some definite high points, some others, not so much. There are a few misfires here and there, as with any creator over that length of time.
Oh, yeah.
But the guy I kind of feel, I don't say sorry for, but I could see where they'd be a little nervous, is Nick Spencer, who's taken over the book.
Yeah, he's probably walking in going, oh my gosh.
He had to know going in, it was a tough act to follow, but this go-down swinging storyline is, it's going to be a tough act to follow.
Yeah, it's really good. And I'll tell you what, I think they picked the right guy for Fantastic Four. I know some people are complaining, but Dan Slott, he has a funniness to him, to his writing. He has some comedy there, and he seems like a good-natured, good-hearted person, as a person when you hear him speak, that I think he's the type of person that fits perfectly with the Fantastic Four.
Oh, absolutely. He did She-Hulk at one point, after I think it was Peter David, or maybe it was before Peter David. He did one of the runs of She-Hulk, I'm going to say about 5 years ago, maybe.
Oh, wow.
And there was one issue in particular that stood out to me as just head and shoulders above the rest. And it's where he single-handedly explained away every continuity foible Marvel has ever had.
Really? I missed that.
And it was a little bit serious, a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but it was artfully done. And if I can figure out which issue it was, I want to say 21, but I'm guessing wildly on that. I just don't remember. But it was one that, as far as in continuity explanations to kind of, you know, gloss over some, well, that's a shame that happened sort of stories.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Which is cool. And I'll tell you what, I am happy to see there are some people out there that enjoy writing these characters and they don't feel compelled that they have to go out and create their own thing. That he can make a living and, you know, he's paid well and he's doing a good job. He loves these characters, and it comes through in his work. So I've been really enjoying him.
Well, there are certain creators out there that grew up on some of these characters, have a deep and profound love and respect for these characters, and they want to kind of give back in some respect.
Yeah, and he's one of them. I think Bendis was probably one of those guys.
Mark Wade, absolutely.
Mark Wade, for sure. Oh, yeah. Mark Wade, you can just tell that he loves the characters. He loves the big universes. He loves the big names, and he respects the characters.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, like, it kind of got into a phase there where everyone was just kind of putting, you know, come in and make your name and then they're out the door. And it just, it creates this churn. And I don't know if they're really putting their best foot forward, if they really love it. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
So I'm happy when we get people who really love the characters and really enjoy them and give us some good stuff. And I'll tell you what, I'm loving this storyline, and I really loved his superior Spider-Man. I love that.
Yeah, when they basically, again, take the mythos, expand it, do something new with it, and get people excited about it, to me, that's the mark of a really good writer.
Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. So I'll be sad to see him go, but like I said, I don't think they could have picked a better title for him to be going to than Fantastic Four for him. I mean, heck, his Silver Surfer run was the art, and it was a little bit off for me a few sometimes, but the end of that thing, he ended with, you know, a grand finale.
He did. He told a good story. I thought it was a bit too Doctor Who and not enough Silver Surfer-ish.
Understand.
But, you know, that was the direction he chose to go, and for that direction, he told a really good story.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, good things are happening. Good things all around. And I hope that DC sticks the landing with this new Justice League stuff. And I think the other two stories in there, Batman, once they move beyond this wedding stuff, I'm hoping they can turn it into something good and not just use it as a setup for a death or a setup for a conflict that could happen. But we'll see. I think it's almost a giveaway that something like that may happen.
To me, the big question with DC is how the Superman titles do.
Oh, yeah, because Bendis is a heavy hitter, and I was liking what was happening with Superman, and this looks like it could be good, and it could make Superman a dominant character, DC.
What's going to be interesting is, depending how much of what's gone before they keep and how much they don't, you could wind up with Bendis doing a really good run, but having some people who are still a little resentful of maybe having liked what went before that wasn't kept or something.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I could see that happening. There's always going to be some people that, it seems like no matter which direction, people get angry out there, at least online.
Yeah, and there's sometimes where, hey, it's a different guy, he's telling a different story. That's one thing. It's another thing for them to have spent a lot of time, you know, building up, you know, the Super Sons or things like that. And we don't know if how much of, you know, Jonathan and Lois and stuff is going to get kept.
That's true, because Super Sons was a really strong title, and now it's just kind of gone. I mean,
I hope they can find a way to kind of have a, you know, let Bendis do his thing, tell the story he wants to tell, yet not kind of throw the, pardon the pun, the baby out with the bathwater. Granted, Jonathan's a bit bigger than that, but you get the idea.
I've really enjoyed seeing Superman as a dad, and I don't want to see that gone. I want to see that still there, and I haven't seen that yet, but I'm hoping.
Yeah, they've had one or two other times in the past they've gone down that route, and it's again, that pendulum that swings back and forth. Is he married? Is he not? Is he a dad? Is he not? Kind of a deal. And it comes down to, does the writer and the powers that be, is that their vision of Superman? Is he the dad or the big brother or the guy you hang out with?
Yeah, and I'm interested to see what Superman fan thinks on the Slack channel when these Superman titles start coming out.
Absolutely.
He is the biggest Superman fan we know.
I need to catch up on his podcast, because not only that, but as I'm watching Krypton, I'm thinking, wait, I know this is from the comics, but that I'm not so sure about.
Exactly, and he's the resident expert in our community.
if he's not doing episodes on those episodes of Krypton, he's missing an opportunity. And I'm sure he is. I haven't checked. Time.
Now, one other thing I was going to tell you, I think it's kind of funny, but I think Bendis has a clause in every contract he has with Marvel or DC that his artists must do double-page spreads. Did you notice the double page spreads in everything he's done?
Yeah.
Even at DC, I'm like, the double page spread followed him here.
There are times and places where it really works, and it gives the right, I don't say cinematic feel, but the right visual and stuff.
Yeah, he sure loves them.
There are other times where it's like, you really didn't need one here. And I don't think he, well, with powers, I think he's pretty bad at that.
Yeah, it's like every page is a double page spread. You're like, oh my gosh.
I hate the two-page spreads and powers where it's all the talking heads in the interrogation room or whatever.
Oh, yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
I hit the page break, and I don't know if I go right or if I go down.
Exactly. Yeah, sometimes following that dialogue, it's like, oh, my gosh, which way am I going?
Every time it throws me. Every time.
Yeah. So I'm hoping for good things. Let's keep stay positive. We're going to hope that all these titles, good things in the future.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a ton of great stuff coming out. If you're not finding what you're loving, I mean, keep looking. It's got to be out there.
It's just insane. And now with the summer rush out there, you know, everyone's publishing everything. It seems like my bill's been going up and up at Cowabunga. I'm like, oh my gosh.
I know what you mean. For me, what I think is kind of a hidden gem that may not work for everybody, but I do think there's a wider audience than is probably reading it, is this Shattered Grid stuff over with the Power Rangers.
Yeah, that's the one that you were telling me about, and you said it's great, amazing stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that they kicked it off with Power Rangers 25, which in addition to being issue 25, they used to celebrate the 25-year actual anniversary of the Power Rangers when it launched on TV and such. And back in the TV show, as early as, I think it was Turbo, Power Rangers Turbo, where they had a new set of Rangers, they had a team up with the previous Blue Ranger. Think of that as Flash, 123, where Barry Allen meets Jay Garrick.
Okay.
So you set the scene of, okay, we can meet the past Rangers. Almost every year after that, they did a team up with the current team and the previous team.
Okay.
So you'd have, you know, some big two-parter with the blowout of, you know, all the Rangers and, you know, 10 Rangers morphing at once, whatever. Think of that as the JLA-JSA crossovers.
All right.
Okay. Shattered Grid's essentially, again, the Crisis on Infinite Earths equivalent or whatever. They're bringing a lot of characters in, and there's a certain feel, not that they've said it, but Rangers will live, Rangers will die sort of a thing. I mean, there's some stakes to be had here, and they've got a very credible threat.
Ah, so they're building up towards something large happening.
The storyline in and of itself is epic, and everything that the Legendary War should have and could have been, or actually should have been, but probably couldn't have been, from Power Rangers Super Mega Force. And that was where they leveraged the footage from Gokaiger, which was the 35th Super Sentai series. And on the Japanese side, just like with the Power Rangers and stuff, their powers, the theme, unlike dinosaurs or trains or animals or whatever, was Sentai. They
could
turn into past Rangers.
Ah.
So for that big thing, they had a scene at the end of it where they had like 199 Super Sentai Rangers all there.
Wow.
Just the logistics for that many stunt people, even not even stunt people, but that many people in costume is insane.
Yeah, it is. Now, could a new reader pick up that issue 25 and start with it there? Or?
I think so. They did a little bit of setting the groundwork maybe in the previous issue or whatever, but I've been reading it the whole time, so it's a little hard to know. I think they were fairly accessible.
Okay, so worst case, pick up some trades maybe to get caught up.
I think it would help to pick up an earlier arc or two where they set up the bad guy initially.
Okay.
But I don't think that's mandatory, because they kind of tell you who he is.
And what's going on.
And if you're willing to just accept that versus having experienced the story that set that up.
I mean, then it's still a good read, then.
Yeah, it's like with the Hunt for Wolverine Weapon Lost. You said it was very accessible, but, I mean, did you feel you had to read The Death of Wolverine to really have it set up?
Yeah, I see exactly what you're saying, yeah.
You can argue either way on that one.
You could. You could say, yes, you have to read it, or you don't really have to read it.
He's dead. He's coming back. They're hunting for him.
That's
good.
All you need to know.
Go. Yeah.
Exactly. It makes perfect sense. So I'm thinking about checking it out. I might contact Eric. I know he listens to these episodes, because every now and then when he hears me say something, he'll send me a message. He's like, do you want this book? I may check this out. Let me know what you think, Eric.
Again, I'm really enjoying it. It's a lot of fun, but it's something that not only is really kind of honoring and respecting the Power Ranger franchise, but has a very comic book feel to it, in so much as, again, it really reminds me of the JLA-JSA crossovers.
Which is cool, and that's what I like. I like having that feel of a comic book, while even if it's a licensed property or something, you know, you can still feel like you're not just reading a licensed book.
That exactly, makes it nice. Exactly.
Tough to do.
So let's see, we've got the preview spotlight going up tomorrow as we record this, so people will have already listened to that. A lot of great picks this time around. A couple of duplicates, but it happens. People are excited, I think, about the Batman wedding.
Yeah.
You may not be, but others are, and I get it. The next previews comes out on May 30th. That means the next preview spotlight deadline will be the week and a half after that on Saturday morning, June 9th. And that's really as early as I get up. If you need a little extra time, just let me know. Most people got their clips in early this time, which really helped going into the weekend. I had most of the episode ready to go. There was just one guy who was really slow, and that's me. I usually do mine at the last minute. I'm really bad about that.
You're the worst.
But I'm holding nobody up but myself. So there's that. And then, let's see, before then, we've got the teleconference, which happens this Saturday, which is right before this episode goes up, so never mind that. I really need to take better notes on this. The next one then would be June 16th. We do those a week after the preview spotlight deadline, but unlike doing it early in the morning, we do it at a sensible point in the evening at 7 p.m. Central Time. Hop on Skype. We talk about what we talk about.
Yeah, and it's always a lot of fun. I've done it twice, and I've had a blast each time.
Yeah, I enjoy those. It can be a lot of fun. Sometimes it leads me to, ooh, I should pick this up, or, you know, catch up on reading this, or, you know, whatever.
Exactly. Like, I need more to read, but I keep getting more stuff.
I know. I thought I was doing good to break even on reading as many as I'd acquired this week. Of course, yeah. Right before we were recording this, I was pulling together the comics I need to catch up on for the books we're reviewing next week. And that was a little staggering. So
you're like, oh my gosh, this is a big stack just to get caught up.
It happens, but I got to get caught up anyways.
Definitely.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next week as we discuss Justice League No Justice number 1 from DC, Venom number 1 from Marvel, and Ghost Money number 10 from Lion Forge.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.